All right. So last week, we began discussing the kind of the next stage of the bracha, of the second bracha, which is Somich Noflim Rofi Cholim Matyar Asurim. So last week we discussed Somich Noflim, and we were discussing these three clauses within the context that they're introduced at, with the statement Mechaye Mesim Barachamim Rabim, that Hashem revives the dead, resurrects the dead with Rachamim Rabim, with abundant Rachamim, with abundant mercy. And we mentioned that the idea of mercy, of Rachamim, is something which requires some impetus, some catalyst from the individual, and then Rachamim is what Hashem does, that He kind of enables it to do it, you know, to continue the way it's supposed to go, to not be prevented by something else, to override some kind of impediment. But that, as opposed to Chesed, which is, you know, kind of like totally a free gift, Rachamim is more something which the Rachamim is that Hashem will overlook something which is, you know, something preventative, but that it requires some catalyst from the person themselves. And that the and we mentioned the I think we mentioned it from the Avudraham, that says that that these three phrases, it wasn't that very amazing, the Ritva, that says that these three phrases, Somich Noflim Rofi Cholim Matir Asurim, is then going to explain how Hashem is Mechayim Mesim Berachamim Rabim. These are examples of the Rachamim Rabim, of the abundant mercy with which Hashem is Mechayim Mesim. So these three things are, it's not literally Tchias HaMesim, not literally people who are dead, but there is some element, some same model of Tchias HaMesim, and that they're done with Rachamim Rabim. So we discussed last week Somich Noflim, so we'll start tonight with Rofei Cholim. I wanted to just, before we discuss what Rofei Cholim does mean, just one thing that it's important to point out, which this is true also for Somich Noflim and also for Matir Asurim, and for this whole bracha, but I think it's particularly becomes a point necessary to mention regarding Rofei Cholim, which is that this is not
very fancy
a,
class.
That's right. This is not a request for refuah. When we say Rofei Cholim, we say that Hashem is Rofei Cholim, is not a bakasha. It's not asking Hashem to do anything. It's not asking for Him to heal. Some people, you know, you have a close friend or relative, family member who's sick. When you say Rofei Cholim, might in your head think, Hashem, please heal my relative. That's not at all the point of this stage of Shemona Esrei. This is a statement of shevach, of praise, that Hashem does this, that He's Rofei Cholim. And this is important in terms of the tachlis, in terms of the purpose of this bracha, or of this stage of Shemona Esrei. We mentioned in the beginning, towards the beginning of this class, and the first three brachos are shevach. The purpose of that is to bring in, that we should gain an appreciation that will bring home to us the full impact of before whom we're standing, of who we're speaking to. So we have to bring it home to ourselves how great Hashem is, so that we can fully appreciate and be impacted and affected by the fact that we're standing in tefillah. If we see this as a bakasha, if you mistakenly view this as a request, then you'll miss that point. This point is not meant to be an act of beseeching. It's a point meant to be a point of impressing upon yourself and contemplating that Hashem is so great that He does these things. So just that's an important caveat for all of this bracha, but I think particularly in this line, there is, you know, more of a temptation to kind of channel it in the wrong direction. So I just wanted to put out that introduction.
In the art scroll, though, and I, you know, I, it's art scroll is better scholar than I am. There is a paragraph below. It has an asterisk, and it says, if you have somebody you want to play for.
No, no, that's by the eighth bracha of Shemoneh Esrei.
Oh, this right. is late. Oh, right, right. I'm in the wrong spot.
Right, okay. right. So in the second right, one of the losses when we moved down here to the social hall so that we get better visibility from the door is that we lost the Sidurim. But so in the in the second bracha Shemoneh Esrei we say Somich Noflim Verofei Cholim.
Oh, so, oh, I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah.
Much
so
for your
right. So we'll get there in or 4 years. We'll be there.
I'm referring to the wrong place.
Right. But so when we say Verofei Cholim, so that is a statement which is meant for our own appreciation to appreciate the kindnesses that Hashem does, and is not meant to be a bakasha, is not meant to be a request, and it's important in terms of gaining what you're supposed to get out of this in order to fully appreciate the rest of Shemoneh Esrei. You have to kind of take that step here at the beginning. So Rofei Cholim. So the Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Yakar, the Re ben Yakar, says that this clause, this phrase, is based on the pasuk in the end of the fourth aliyah of Parshas Beshalach, Shmos 15:26, says Ani Hashem Rofecha. The pasuk says Kol Machala Sher Samti Al Mitzrayim Lo Asim Alecha Ani Hashem Rofecha. So, which roughly translated all of the sicknesses, all of the maladies that I put upon Mitzrayim, I will not place on you, as I am Hashem, your healer. So, very obvious question in the Pasuk, that the Pasuk starts saying, I won't place any sickness on you. So, what should follow is that you don't need a healer, mm-hmm. right, if you're not getting sick. And then it says, because I am Hashem, your healer. So if Hashem won't place any machala on us, then why is he healing us? The Pasuk says Hashem won't make us sick, and then it says that he'll heal us. So what is he healing exactly if there is no illness? So Rashi there brings a medrash which kind of inserts some words into the Pasuk, and we'll try to understand exactly how that's fair, what that means. Rashi brings a medrash. The medrash says, and even if you do get sick, it will be as if you didn't get sick, because Hashem is the healer. Hashem is the one healing you. Hashem is the one administering the refuah, and therefore it's like you didn't get sick. So what exactly does that mean, and exactly how does that fit with the pasuk? How do you read that into the pasuk? So the Mizrahi there, one of the commentaries on Rashi, says that the intent of the pasuk, if you start the pasuk from the beginning, the pasuk says, everyone should know it because it's in my bar mitzvah parsha, says, "Im shamoa tishma l'kol Hashem l'kachav azatam mitzosav v'shamarti kol chukav." Then kol amachal asher sami mitzrayim l'asim l'acha ani Hashem rofech. I don't remember that from my bar mitzvah. I remember it because I leaned it on Pesach when they also leaned b'shalach. Whenever my mom is there, you have to give her some nachas, so I would lean. But so the pasuk says, "Im shamoa tishma." If you listen to all of the mitzvos, so then you won't need any healing, right? But if you don't listen, then Hashem brings a rebuke. He sends us a wake-up call so that we will shape up and merit Olam Haba, and we'll be able to correct our misdirection, and we'll be headed in the right direction. We'll be Zochad Olam Haba. So therefore, since the machala is for our own good, the machala is the cure to the true underlying cause of the illness, which is the chait, which is the misdeed which was behind it. So since the whole purpose of the machala that Hashem gives us is in order to redirect us, so it's as if it wasn't given. It's not a real sickness. The machala, what does Hashem say? All of the machala that I brought on Mitzrayim, I won't bring on you, because I am Hashem, your healer. How do you read the pasuk? The machala that was brought onto Mitzrayim, which was penitentiary, which was punitive punishment, which was meant to punish them for what they did wrong. So that kind of machala won't be brought on to Klal Yisrael. Our suffering is always for a message. It's always for our own good. So what the pasuk means to say is, Ani Hashem Rofecha, I am Hashem who's healing you. I'm not bringing machala that I brought on Mitzrayim onto you. I'm Hashem, your healer. I'm the healer of spiritual maladies. I'm bringing a refuah in the form of Yesurin, in the form of suffering. But that's the goal, the purpose of it is in order to redirect you. The purpose isn't because I want you to be sick. The purpose isn't because you need to be. The purpose is because you need to take a message, and the way that this message is being sent might be through a machal, might be through a choli, but that's because I, Hashem, am sending this as a message to you. So therefore, Ani Hashem Rofecha, says Rashi, it's as if you didn't get sick, because the whole sickness is not really there. Hashem isn't making someone sick just because he wants them to be sick. Hashem is giving them a sickness for their own good, whether that for their own good be because of some message that they need to take, or like the Gemara in Bracho says, that there's such a thing called Yisurim Shel Ava, that sometimes Hashem gives someone suffering in order that the person basically be, it's, not get into this context to be a total tangent, what exactly the, but in order that the person receives schar for it, that the person accept that what Hashem does is for the best, but that Hashem is always giving it for a purpose. It's not just because I want you to suffer. Hashem's always doing it for a purpose, and therefore it's as if the person didn't get sick. This also is, like we said, that all of these things are berachamim rabim, are done with rachamim, which means that Hashem is helping it through, but it needs to come from us, because it's the impetus, it's the, you know, meant to be the signpost for us to make our own changes in ourselves. Hashem's not going to make us change. He's going to if we make our own decision to change, if we take the message, so Hashem in his rachamim is giving us the message, but we still have to take that step and take a step on our own and redirect ourselves. So that's again the rachamim rabim, where it's not total chesed. It's not where Hashem just gives something which is, you know, free without any involvement of our own, but that there has to be something that we do which Hashem is facilitating.
Response.
Right. Fine. That's one level. On a more basic level, the idea, so that rofei cholim, so, you know, the simple, straightforward understanding of what we're saying is that a person has to realize that all refuah, that all healing comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The doctor is at best a messenger. Sickness does not come from malnutrition or lack of hygiene, and nor does health come from a healthy diet or the right regimen of vitamins and medications. Both are only because Hashem wills them. People used to say, you find this in very old machzorim and very old sidurim, there used to be a yehi ratzon that people would say before they took medications, because they would acknowledge that this is just their hishtadlus. But that really, you know, they're taking a medication, it's really coming through HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they, you know, because Hashem gave us an obligation to do Hishtadlus, so we're doing what, you know, our Alderika Teva, the way the natural world works, our involvement, but we're also asking Hashem that the medicine should work, because we know that, you know, the real source of the sickness is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the real source of the refuah is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, the most basic level, that when we say rofei cholim is also just to realize that refuah, that refuah ultimately, even if, you know, the doctor gave the right prescription or you know, was very skillfully did delicate surgery or whatever it was, at the end of the day, that refuah comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu.
So what happens to those machzorim, inserts that you're referring to? We don't see them anymore, do we?
Yeah, there's if you find the old enough machzorim, you'll find lots of interesting stuff. A Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael who had a machzor that was 400 years old, he would bring it to the yeshiva on the Yom Nuraim, and he would let people like take a turn with it. You know, everybody could, you know, take it for, you know, if somebody just wanted to have this, you know, very old machzor for a few minutes. One of the things that it had in there was at the end of Mariv of Yom Kippur, it had basically that the minhag apparently used to be. I never heard of this until I saw this machzor, but in this machzor it said that people would stay up all night on Yom Kippur, And if someone felt weak and felt like they had to go to sleep, they would say, especially Yihi Ratzon, that the sleep that they slept on Yom Kippur should give them the koach to you know, be mispalel and do tshuva the next day. So they were kind of acknowledging that, you know, I'm only sleeping in order to facilitate, you know, what I have to do tomorrow. But there is this Yihi Ratzon in there that that your sleep should give you the koach to you know, better be able to make it through the fast, whatever it was. So why these things? I mean, some of these things probably fell by the wayside because, you know, they're so beyond us that there was wasting ink to put something like that into the sither. But I imagine, you know, before there was a printing press that was hard to keep things as standardized as we have them now, which, you know, has pluses and its minuses. But
Also, you don't want to encourage people nowadays to think you can eat all you want and treat yourself badly and drink and everything else, and if you pray, you'll be okay, because God doesn't necessarily work that way either.
Right.
And you have to do the right. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. But I also was thinking that it's hard for me to accept that somebody is, and I know Hashem sends sickness and health, I mean, ultimately. But and I also feel we have to do our hishtadlus. You know, I'm not the kind of person who says, you know, don't do the chemo, you'll be fine. Just pray a lot. You know, that's not what. But I also think that sometimes it's not a message to the person themselves. It could be a message to other people or how we treat them. We don't know why somebody gets sick. And it's hard to say, oh, it's a message to this person that they have to improve themselves. I mean, I'm thinking, not that my husband Avi was perfect, but he was a very fine person. And I think sometimes some of what he was going through was a message to me or our children or to other people who cared about him.
So I don't know if this is three things, but I'm holding up the number three here. But I'd say that two out of three, I think, was for sure agree with, that I think that someone getting sick is not necessarily a message that they need to improve.
Right.
It might be, you know, for something else. It certainly is true that a person who gets sick, that there is a message in that there can be and is a message in that for someone else. And I would say a step further that there, for sure, if it's something that affects other people, is a message for them themselves. But I think that that's true for the same reason that I think that it won't be true that someone will suffer for something that has nothing to do with them. Because we say that Hashem is Kel Amuna Ve'in Avel Tzadik V'Yashar, right? We say that Tzur Tamim Paolo Kol Drach of Mishpat, that Hashem, everything that he does is with Mishpat. And some of there's a very interesting discussion the Gaonim have about whether or not Yesh Misa Belochit, about whether or not someone could die without sinning. Not for now, but that the there are Rishonim who say that, you know, Hashem doesn't give anyone something without there being some justification for it. Now, that justification doesn't have to be that they did something wrong or there's some message that they need to take. There is a Rambam who does seem to imply such a thing. The Rambam in Mor Nevochim does seem to imply, you know, that and understanding it in context, that, you know, if you think about that, sometimes this is a very far from us kind of perspective on the world, but if you think of the world from the perspective of the amount that God gives us and the amount that in a real absolutist kind of perspective, how much we owe Hashem, that if we think about, you know, we know Hashem is a Rachaman and he doesn't hold us accountable for, you know, every small mistake, but if you think about it, and the Baalei Mussar write about this, that, you know, at the end of the day, that if somebody does, you know, the smallest thing wrong, kafi, you know, compared, contrasted to what you owe Hashem, like, Hashem would be justified saying, you know, like, you know, you're not perfect, that's the end of you. He doesn't do that because he understands we're human, he made us, and he understands, but at the end of the day, that it doesn't have to be that someone is sick because of a message of what they need to improve. There could be other messages,
right,
that it doesn't have to be something that they did wrong, but it could be a message that there's more they could be doing, or it could be a message that they need to show people how to accept something from Hashem, even if, like, you know, Eov, for example, right? He was punished even though explicit in you don't have to go to the Midrashim, right? It's explicit there that he didn't deserve it. But it was, you know, there was something to be shown from Eov suffering, something to be learned from it. But that there's certainly at the end of the day going to be that there's some reason that the person himself is the conduit for that message, something that's in it for them also, because and we say that Kol Drach of Mishpat, that everything that Hashem does is always for everyone who's affected by it is measured. We say that if someone gets put in prison in the American or any human judicial system, so you put somebody in prison, so you know their kids didn't do anything that they deserve to have their father in prison, but you know that's the best we could do. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu is measured that everything that you know the way it affects everyone is always going to be something which is measured and balanced. All right, that's that was so Rofei Cholim, the third of the trio here, Matir Asurim. So Umatir Asurim. So how does this fit in with the Trias Amesim theme here? So the Avudram says that that someone who is freed is like, he says, they are also like Mesim Shachiyu, someone who was freed from captivity, from prison, is like someone who has died and brought back to life, and therefore they also fit into this context. So exactly what's the comparison? Why is someone who was captured and or confined and then freed, why are they like, you know, what's how does that fit into the rubric of Trias HaMesim here? So we mentioned a couple weeks ago, the Vilna Gaon, who says that the concept of death, that the idea of Misa is that you can't take care of yourself, that you're unable to help yourself. And I found recently as a Maharal who says something along these lines, that the idea of Misa is someone who's that you're no longer in a position to take care of yourself. So and that's what all of the examples that Chazal give of someone who's Chashav Kames, we discussed that they're in various degrees of relying on others and needing someone else because they can't take care of themselves, they can't help themselves. So the person who's imprisoned, the person who's trapped, so he's in a position where he can't do anything for himself to improve his situation. When he's freed, he's like someone who's given new life in that now he's in the position to take care of himself. The Asurim also mean someone who's trapped in a different way. Someone who is bound is trapped by his desires and his expectations. I meant to find the Maimar Chazal or the Pasuk that talks about exactly the language. Someone who is Nesar, I don't remember if it's a Bemesech Tavasov, somebody who basically captured in the net of his taivas, of his desires. Chazal say, Ein ben chorin ela misha osek b'torah, that only someone who learns Torah, only someone who's involved in Torah, can learn to overcome his desires and can make the decisions that he really wants to make. Rav Dessler talks about, he's a mashal, that is an analogy, that you have someone who's a chain smoker, and he wakes up, and his lungs are hurting, and he's coughing, and he says, you know what, that's it, I'm quitting, today's the day I'm quitting, right? So an hour goes by, and he has the urge for a cigarette, and he says, you know what, just one won't hurt, and he has a cigarette. And then, an hour later, again, he says, okay, you know what, just one more won't hurt. And he goes through the whole day that way, and, you know, at the end of the day, his day was pretty much the same as every day before that, and he goes to sleep, and he wakes up in the morning, and his lungs are burning, and he's coughing, and he says, that's it, today I am quitting. Now, an hour later, he comes and he wants to smoke again, and he tells himself, or he thinks to himself, you know what, just one won't hurt. And he knows that what he's saying is absolutely not true, because he just did this yesterday. But he has the ability to choose to fool himself. And that's what the Yetzer Hara, Rav Dessler explains, that's what the Yetzer Hara really does, is the Yetzer Hara gives that if we would be totally uninvolved, if we would be totally objective in looking at everything, it would be so easy to always choose the right thing, but the Yetzirah gives us the ability to fool ourselves into doing what we know is wrong, what we know doesn't make any sense, but we tell ourselves, we convince ourselves that there's some way in which this, you know, really is an okay thing to do. But Torah gives you the ability to overcome your desires. The Gemara in Kiddushin says, Barasi Yetzirah, Barasi Torah Tavlin, that I created the Yetzirah, and I created the Torah as the Tavlin. Very loosely translate this to mean that I created Torah as the cure or the remedy, but the word tavlin, actually, we find all over Shas, the word tavlin actually means spices. Oh. It means the flavorings. So I created the Yetzer Hara, and I created the Torah as the spice, as the flavoring. So what is that exactly? Does that mean what are spices? What are seasonings? They're you know, you don't want to eat salt, you don't want to eat pepper. The things that enhance and that direct the flavor of, if something, you know, is needs to be, you know, the this is a sweet type of food, you sweeten it with there's something which direct they direct the way a food is supposed to go. That's what a tavlin is it directs the flavors of the food. Salt very much is something which, you know, just brings out the Torah gives you the ability to direct your desires. You know, not all desires are bad. We discussed in one of the first shiurim that we had that, you know, when Chazal, they eliminated the Yetzer Hara for marital relations, that within a few days there were no eggs to be had because the chickens, their bodies actually cooled down because the eggs rotted inside their bodies. So they didn't fully form, whatever it was. So the taivos, even the yetzer itself is something itself which is meant to be channeled, right? We say in the second pasuk of Kriya Shema, we say v'avadetem Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavchem, with two vases, and the Chazal say, why is it two vases? Because it's with b'shnei yitzrecha. You're supposed to serve Hashem with both of your yetzers. You're supposed to channel your desires and your taivas are also supposed to be channeled towards avodas Hashem. But so a person can be captured by their taivas, or a person can be in charge of their desires. Chazal say, sorry, not Chazal, it's Pasuk in Mishle. I don't know. Okay, whichever it is the Lashon is Tzadikim Libam Birshusam Rishayim Birshus Libam. That the righteous, their heart is under their control, and the Rishayim, the wicked, their heart is in control of them. That's the two possibilities. A person can be captured, can be controlled by his desires, or a person can be in control. They can hold the reins of their desires.
The heart, in this case, is the
seat of passion.
Is the Sahara.
Is the right? So the we'll discuss it hopefully sometime later. The Zohar says that Mishkan Hayetzer Hu Balev, that the Yetzer Hara resides in a person's heart, right? Really, both the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara, but the Yetzer Hara resides in a person's heart. So I had a rabbi, a mentor when I was in high school. His name is Rabbi Yisrael Mengel, who's the Chabad Shaliach in Cincinnati, in Blue Ash, Ohio, and he told me this story that some non-religious Jew came over to him and told him, you know, he told him, Rabbi, you know, I feel bad for you. And he says, why do you feel bad for me? He says, because, you know, you're stuck. I'm free. You know, I could do whatever I want. I can, right. You know, live right. The way I want, and I can do what I want. And you're stuck. You know, you have to do what you're told. You have to, you know, your life is not up to you. You don't get to do what you want to do. And the rabbi, Rabbi Mengel, turned to him and he said, you know, you might be surprised to hear this, but I really feel bad for you. He says, because...
Clever fellow.
He says, because, you know what? I really want to do this. I'm really happy. I'm enjoying. I love that, you know, I live my life the way that I do. But I'll bet that if you wanted to, you go to work tomorrow and you wear a yarmulke. And when anyone asks you, you know, you look a little different, you stick out, and somebody asks you, why are you wearing this, you know, funny thing on your hat? Tell them, don't tell them because I had a bet with a rabbi. Tell them it's to remind me that God is above me at all times, right? You do that tomorrow and let me know how it goes. And the guy said, I can't, right? He would feel too out of place. He would feel too, he would feel like he sticks out. And the rabbi said, I told you, I'm free and you're not. Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh, interesting.
So okay. That was the, he said, I, you know, if I really wanted to, I could take off the yarmulke. There's no one who's going to, you know, I'm not going to get struck by lightning. If I really wanted to live my life that way, yeah. I could do it. Yeah. You, if you want to change, you're stuck. Mm-hmm. Right?
Wow.
So,
that's
very clever. So, yeah, it was, but, so Hashem frees the bound. He gives people the ability to do what they really want to do. And this also, again, getting back to our introduction here, is also through Rachamim that Hashem gives us the tools for seeing the truth. He gives us the ability to see the truth. He allows us to escape the control of our desires. He gives us that ability. But the person, at the end of the day, has to make the decision to take that step. They have to involve themselves in learning Torah. They have to make the active decision that I'm going to go against what my natural desires want me to do. Torah, the Chazal say that Torah is munach b'karen zavis, that the Torah, it's sitting there in a corner. Anyone who wants to can come and take it. But at the end of the day, Torah doesn't come to you. You have to, at the end of the day, it has to be taken, that it has to be picked up. There's rachamim there, that the opportunity is given to a person. Anyone who wants is able to connect themselves to that, and they can overcome their desires. But at the end of the day, it's a step that the person, and the initiation has to be taken by the person themselves to make that first step. So we had Somi Chnoflim. We talked about a person who's on a careening downward path, and Hashem stops their fall. He doesn't pick them up, but he stops the fall and gives the person the ability to pick themselves back up. And the Rofei Cholim, a person who is in the Chataim, the Averos, whatever they've done, that Hashem sends them the message, and they have the ability to take that message and turn themselves around. And Matir Asurim, that Hashem gives the ability, the person, he opens the door to escape the prison. You have to walk out. But Hashem opens the door for you. It's all the rachamim rabim, that Hashem is there to enable it. Hashem is there to support the process, but a person has to go through that process on their own.
So you see, I'm curious about those three differencing. So Mechnoflim, Rofei Cholim, Matir Asurim. Is there a kind of a sequence? As you see,
that one is
how are those three related? I'm trying to get to. Is there a dynamic in which they work with logic?
Why is one first and why is second? And
right.
One,
in terms of sequence, I actually didn't really think about that. I don't have to think about it. Nothing that.
I'm amazed you think about everything else.
Appreciate that. In terms of the common denominator, it's just, I think, this idea of a process which is kind of inexorably headed in one direction, and that's kind of we talked about also the idea of the trias amesim that's happening here, as you have a process which is inevitably, you know, headed towards destruction and is turned around, and that's the all of these things are things which are. Processes which are on, you know, a downward trajectory, and that they're all turned around, and the ability to come back, and that's an element of the trias amesim that's happening. But in terms of the
this thought here. You're hurtling, as you said, the image is a very poignant, a very strong one. You're going down. You're going in one direction. If you consider sickness as maybe kind of a break, attempt to kind of get your attention, so to speak, and then the confinement is where you really get a lot more of a break. So these are all attempts to kind of get you to turn around, to wake up, to notice.
Okay.
Just a thought.
I'm also wondering whether you have less and less control, and so it's a bigger issue to have to turn around. In other words, when you're sick, you lose some ability to do some control over your life, over your body, and over your life. And then what was the next one? The Matir Asirim, or was it the Noflim?
Yeah, so Somech Noflim is first.
So you're falling down. So you're down on the ground. So you've lost some control. You're not upright. You're not able to go as quickly.
You're going in the wrong direction.
You're going in the wrong direction. And then the next one is Cholim.
Rezrofecholim. Yeah.
Right. So then you broke your leg. You know, I mean, you really are losing control.
Thinking of it as in a senior issue, you know, you fall but you don't break your hip. No, you fall and you do break your hip. No, you fall and you break your hip and you go to the hospital or you're bed bound.
Right,
you
know? Right.
Different levels of...
No, and yeah, exactly. I'm thinking you're just losing more and more control and it's becoming more and more difficult to turn it around and take control of your life again. I was thinking of the same thing. I see that with like my mother. Mm-hmm. You know, that just losing.
Well, that's a process of aging too. It's not necessarily God giving more messages to change your life, right? It just happens.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe that's part of why they say, well, if you use those messages, why if you can become wiser.
Right.
And you know, they say older people are wiser. Well, yes, sometimes they are, and sometimes they're not. You know, that's why they use that opportunity.
Very nice ideas. All right. I'm wondering if it's maybe we'll stop here for tonight because I think the next idea would take us.
Interesting. So we're talking about these different things that kind of break, and we conclude with Hashem who revives.
Right.